Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Good evening and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Comlock Center and can be found on the web at www.comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K. Tonight's guest is Dr. Athena Drews, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Hello, Fran. And as you mentioned, when Dr. Drews comes on, if you have a child or know of a child that is intuitive or psychic or mediumistic, and you had some questions for the doctor, feel free to call in. The number again is 1-888-627-6008. You know, last night, we watched, I don't know if any of you had seen a TV series that started, it was an ABC production, and it aired last year. I didn't think it was very good when it ran, but evidently it's now being rerun on the OWN network. And one of our listeners had told us to tune in the other night because the episode was supposedly going to be, you know, testing mediums. So I had never seen that episode, so I did tune in. And boy, now I know why the show did not make it. You know, they started off, their testing of the medium consisted of, you know, one medium where an ABC producer hooked up with James Van Prague. And basically had Van Prague do a reading for him. And, of course, at the end of the reading, the interviewer, the reporter, pointed out the fact that all of the information is very readily available on Google. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, you think? I mean, you didn't have enough sense to show up at this supposed session where you're testing the medium with somebody that
has no history on Google,
or that just showed up. So there's no opportunity for the medium to look them up. You know, so you know that was doomed to failure. And
but it's like, could you not figure this out ahead of time?
I know. I mean, and
if you're going to accuse him of doing certain things, then prepare yourself so that he can't.
Exactly. And look, I mean, it's true. I mean, who's to say? I mean, the medium could have looked things up on Google, you know. I mean,
right. Which you know, it reminds me of how we designed our own medium certification program, which basically is evaluating mediums and showing that they could not possibly have gotten any of this information through any kind of fraudulent means. So you would think if we could come up with a science-based, controlled situation for testing mediums, that they, if they're going to frame this thing as testing a medium, they should at least do the due diligence of saying, okay, I'm a famous person, I'm on the Internet, let me not be the person he reads.
Right. Another segment on this show, some of our listeners may be familiar with Amazing Randy, who's a well-known skeptic of psychic phenomena, and he's, you know, magician by trade. So he is famous for putting out these challenges, these million-dollar challenges. And if anybody could prove that they're psychic, that he will give them $1 million. Now, of course, who's the judge? Randy and his employees, sidekick. So they devise these things. So
and I just want to point out that neither of these two have any credentials whatsoever. We don't even know they graduated from high school.
Well, the thing, so the first test, they took a psychic medium, and the test consisted of, they took 10 photographs. Of course, did not show them to the medium. And the test was set up so that 9 of these photographs were of people that are still living, and 1 of the photographs was a person that's no longer in the physical. And they put them all in manila envelopes and sealed them. And then they brought in the psychic medium. And they said that if he could correctly pick the dead person out of the 10, 7 times out of 10 tries, that they would give him $1 million. Now, the test itself, how would a medium make a link? He has no idea who he's trying to link. He wasn't shown the spirit. In this case, the person that's dead was Elvis Presley. You know, and I could see, even though it wouldn't be a fair test, if you beforehand showed the medium the picture of Elvis Presley
Test. But let me point out one other thing about this, is that we already know that when money is the motivator behind any kind of spiritual encounter, spirit's not going to necessarily, pony up and work with you.
Well, I mean, if I was spirit, I would want to. I'd take advantage of the opportunity to show that
the psychic or the medium would have said, "Okay, I'm donating this money to charity, not taking it myself," then there would have been cause for, I believe, the greater good to come in and assist.
Well, I don't. We know that there has to be some sort of a link that's formed. That could be a link with somebody's name. That could be some visual sighting, or it could be a blind, reading. But I think by putting somebody's photograph, at least tell the person what the photograph, is, and let them pick it up. If it's a psychic exercise, that could be either a psychic, or in this case, they were trying to show that mediumship didn't exist, because the photograph was of somebody that was dead, that would mean it was a mediumistic.
Right, and it also became very obvious that these two clowns didn't even know the difference between psychic and medium.
Yeah, another test was they took a palmist, somebody that reads palms. Now, I don't know much about that. I don't put a hell of a lot of faith in that technique myself, but it was somewhat humorous because instead of letting the palmist read people's palms, they showed her photographs of people's hands. the whole thing was, it was.
I don't even think it was a photograph. I think it was a photocopy.
They
put their hand in the photocopy machine, and that's what they gave her to read.
Yeah. So and then there was another one that was, with tarot cards. But the whole exercise was done. The whole session was conducted in a very poor fashion. And as we said, if they just would,
as is all of Randy's stuff.
Yeah, they put a little bit
of thought. That's why they call him amazing.
And then, if you want to do a fair test, assemble an independent panel of judges. And let them devise it, instead of controlling it, the money would never have to be given out in the first place. We're going to go to take our break, and when we come back, we have a very interesting guest that's going to be talking about her work with children that are psychic. So stay with us. When we come back, we'll hear more about the unseen world from the guest, Dr. Athena Drews.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Athena Drews. Our sponsor is the Comlock Center and can be found on the web at www.comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K. Bob?
And Dr. Athena Drews is a licensed child psychologist, a parapsychologist, and consultant to both the Rhine Research Center and the Parapsychology Foundation on children's psychic experiences. I guess the work started as a research assistant at the Dream Lab at Maimonides Medical Center. Dr. Drews has conducted research. She's written articles and reviews. She's presented on children's ESP experiences. She's had her own psychic experience as a child, which I believe carried through adulthood. She's been featured on TV shows, Psychic Children, Paranormal State, and she authored a comprehensive reference work, Parapsychological Research with Children and Annotated Bibliography. Also, she has a very informative website, which is perceptivechildren.org. Welcome, Dr. Drews.
Thank you.
You know, I mentioned your website, you know, perceptivechildren.org. Is perceptive just another term for psychic, or are they interchangeable?
In a sense, it is a different variation of psychic. When I was setting up the website, certain terms and words were already used, so that limited me in being able to use it. I came up with perceptive because I think children in general, and infants and teenagers, are very perceptive to the world around them and have, I believe we all do, have psychic abilities. So I thought it was a very appropriate term to use.
Mm. You know, we get this question asked a lot, and I'm sure, you know, you hear it constantly. It's the nature of your work. But parents sometimes, you know, write to us, and they talk about their children's, you know, psychic abilities. And we know that many children are imaginative, you know, by nature, and it's difficult for a parent to differentiate between somebody's normal so-called imagination and true psychic ability. So I would imagine that much of your work involves, you know, educating parents about how to tell the difference. Is that true?
Some of the inquiries that I get, the parents are a little concerned whether it's a normal developmental phase, such as having an imaginary playmate, or is this something that is more psychic in nature, where the child is actually seeing or having contact with a deceased relative or another type of spirit. So we sort it out in trying to find out how much is developmental. I ask the parents some questions about the nature of the experience and have them keep a log and write it down and to respond basically very neutrally to their child, regardless of whether it's imagined or psychic in nature, so that the child doesn't feel they have to make it up to get the attention of the parent.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, I would imagine, though, that you see some parents that are totally shut down to the possibility that even psychic phenomena exist. So I would sometimes, I guess they bring the child thinking that there has to be something wrong, and maybe you can fix them, so to speak.
Well, I do get a lot of inquiries from parents who are not necessarily believing in psychic phenomena, but trust their children and what they're saying.
Right.
There are other parents who are afraid that it might be a sign of some mental illness. The bottom line for all of them is that the mental health field is not very responsive in a positive way to such experiences, and they don't want their child labeled as psychotic or schizophrenic or crazy. And they are looking for some answers as to whether or not this is normal phenomena within the realm of parapsychology or something they should be concerned about.
Yeah, you know, I guess that stigma of the paranormal applies to adults as well. You know, so many people seem to have these experiences that are deeply moving and significant, but yet they don't tell a soul for fear of being labeled. So it's not exclusively a problem with children, is it?
Absolutely. I created a psychic experience group in Orange County, New York. We meet once a month. There's also another one down in Durham, North Carolina that meets once a month. And the goal in creating them was to offer a safe haven for people who have experiences to come and talk about them, feel validated and heard, and that they're not crazy. On the average, I get about 25 adults, men and women, that come each month to share their experiences, many which have occurred since they were children, and they welcome that safe environment to be able to just talk about it.
And I would imagine that even this is, as you mentioned, a safe group for sharing. In a way, it's not a therapy group, but yet it has some therapeutic effects, I would imagine.
Definitely. It validates their experiences. For many who have been attending regularly, I started a year and a half ago, they feel that their own personal psychic experiences have expanded as a result of just being around other like people and the energy that's created and being together.
Mm.
So it is healing for them, and it is also growth producing.
Yeah. Have you noticed, I hear it said, I haven't seen any statistics, and I don't know that there are any, but there seems to be a common feeling that there's an increase in the number of children who are intuitive, you know, more so than they were, let's say, you know, 20, 30 years ago. You think that's true, or you think that just people are more open to speaking about it?
It's hard to tell. My feeling is that there is an increase, that there are more children perhaps coming into the world that are advanced souls in a sense, that they have a higher understanding and connection to a lot of the psychic experiences and are able to talk about it. A lot has been written about it. I know for myself, since having this website a little over a year, I've seen an increase in the number of contacts about children having the ability to see or speak to relatives that have passed on, or even strangers. I just wrote a paper for the upcoming Parapsychological Association conference in Durham in August on comparing the 172 experiences that were reported to children's letters back in the 1970s that were written to Dr. Louisa Rhine at the Rhine Research Center.
Mm.
And about 69% of all of the emails that I get from parents, and some from children, are experiences that they have contact with spirits, with people that have passed on.
Right.
And at least 74% of them are with strangers. They're not relatives.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, which is an unusual switch. I would expect that they'd be reporting more about relatives or maybe ancestors that they heard about, and but they're not. They're strangers or people that are just coming to them for some connection to help them cross over.
Yeah, and then I guess it's hard to, from a research perspective, you know, to follow up on those if they're strangers. I mean, I guess with, if they're seeing deceased relatives that they never met, and, you know, there are certain physical descriptions and things that can be verified, but I guess with strangers it's a little bit more difficult.
Right.
But I didn't know that, though. The you know, most of what I would have thought, just as you mentioned, that we certainly hear of a lot of children talking to, you know, grandmothers and aunts and uncles that have never met, but I didn't realize that such a large percentage was with people that they didn't know. So your personal interpretation of that would be people, you know, that were helping them in some way, or like guardians, or
it can be guardians. It can just be that these children are so much more advanced energetically that they're attracting the spirits. That, you know, there's a lot of hypotheses out there in terms of 2012, in terms of the Earth's energy shifts, in terms of you know, the distinction between one dimension and the other getting thinner, and so it's very possible that a lot of these spirits or souls are looking for some contact to help them find the light, cross over, and the children seem to be an easy sort of target because they're so receptive.
Hmm. Have you seen any correlation between a child's intelligence and their perceptiveness? You know, in other words, is somebody with a higher IQ more apt to be able to pick up on, you know, on different realms of information?
Well, I've done some research on that and other people as well, and it's not conclusive. It's not an absolute that if you're more intelligent, you tend to be more psychic. Children that have autism have psychic experiences as well. So it's not, doesn't seem to necessarily correlate that way.
Yeah. One thing that from reading one of your articles about your personal life is that I was intrigued by. You relate how, as a child, you had a precognitive dream, and the dream unfolded exactly the way that you dreamt it. You know, and then when you told your father's reaction was somewhat typical because he said to you, "Now, don't tell anyone." Now, how did that make you feel at the time?
Well, I was about 9 or 10 years old when it happened, and it was sort of a lot of mixed feelings coming at once. I had had psychic dreams before, sort of past life memories, knowing that sort of I had a life plan ahead of me. But this was the first profound experience I had where I dreamt about my mother being in a car accident with very vivid scenes, and then they reenacted exactly as the dream. So I wanted some support so that I wasn't crazy, as most people that I come in contact with feel as well. And when my father was not responsive in a positive way, I thought, well, maybe I created it. Maybe somehow my anger at my mother before going to sleep created the dream, created the accident, which would have been pretty phenomenal as a, by itself.
Right.
It made me think, you know, does he think I'm a witch? Is this evil?
Yeah.
Is this bad? You know, and it set me on my life path to find other people who could explain this type of event, which I eventually did find at the Maimonides Medical Center, and also to help children as a psychologist to feel validated and heard and understood, regardless what their experience was.
So then that precognitive dream really did change the course of your life. You could have been in a totally different profession if you didn't have that. It was really a personal search for answers, right?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. The... Well, let's talk about that a little bit, the child-parent relationship. I mean, when a parent refuses to believe the psi experiences that their child is having, how does that affect the child?
Well, it can profoundly affect them in many different ways. They feel cut off then from the parent that they can't share some important experience, and it creates a rift on many levels of that child being able to share just daily life experiences, because they don't feel that parent really understands them or will believe them. And it can create a trauma in many ways in their life that they suppress and hold back these experiences. And, you know, a lot of people have done research looking at adults who have never shared their experiences, and what a relief it is when they finally can talk to someone about it, because it makes them feel like they're crazy. They don't have a sense of understanding about it, and the abilities don't necessarily go away, even though they don't talk about them.
Yeah, you know, I look even from personal experience. You know, when my daughter was a young child and she started talking to imaginary friends, I did what I thought that a good parent was supposed to do, and I took it to a psychologist. Of course, now I want to kick myself in the rear end for doing that, because I know more. But I think that is kind of a typical reaction. You think that you're helping your child when actually you're not. You know, because as you pointed out earlier, I mean, most mental health professionals are not open themselves to the possibilities. So they automatically look for some psychological explanation. So, I mean, is the profession making any strides? Are therapists integrating these things into their practices? Or?
There are some that are much more open and looking for alternative answers. I will get phone calls from therapists saying, you know, this child has come to me. I don't want to label them as schizophrenic or psychotic or give them medication. What do you think? Does this fit the normal paradigm of something in the paranormal field? So they're reaching out a little bit more. There was a wonderful conference just this past March, a few weeks ago, down at Durham, North Carolina, that Ryan Research Center put on, trying to make the public more aware, depathologizing psi, basically trying to help the mental health field understand that this is not something that's pathological.
Sometimes we talk to a lot of people that work in hospice or work in critical care units, and you know, within their environment, like people talking to deceased relatives before they pass is something that's very normal, you know, but yet other professionals would look at them, you know, and think something's amiss, you know. So I guess being open to it depends upon, you know, your personal experiences.
Right.
Yeah. Do you So that does seem to be, I guess, something that you have to bear in mind when working with children, is that there are some percentage of children that really do have psychiatric issues, you know, and need assistance. So I guess that's where your professionalism comes in. I mean, it must be a pretty difficult task, or is it not, to tell what's going on?
Sometimes they're in the gray area, and it's hard to tell, but the guideline for me is that if the child's reporting the spirit is trying to get them to hurt someone or hurt themselves, then it's very possible that it's not the usual spirit contact, and it may be something more on an emotional or psychiatric level. Either way, the child is feeling quite frightened by it, and sometimes medication does help. It's really trying to tease out that fine line and how well are they coping with it. For some of the children and families, if just giving them some guidance and validation is enough to lessen their anxiety and their fears. And for others, when I hear that they're getting aggressive or the children are having emotional outbursts or trying to hurt themselves or hurt other people, then I recommend that they seek psychiatric care at that point.
That makes sense. So a clear warning sign would be if your child starts talking about spirits that are telling them to hurt themselves or hurt others, right? So that seems pretty logical to me. If a child is is seeing spirit and they're troubled by it, do you sometimes just simply tell them to ask the spirit to go away?
Yes, I always encourage children and teens to feel empowered, that they can tell the spirit to go away, to seek the light, to cross over where people who love them are waiting for them, that they don't have to be subjected to it, that they should say it with love and with a caring heart, not with anger or fear, because it only increases the attraction and the contact more. And for a lot of children, that's very empowering, and they're able to do that. And for other children, I tell them to imagine that there's an invisible bubble around them, and it's filled with white light, which is the love of God or Jesus or the universe. And as they breathe in, more white light comes in, and as they breathe out, their bubble expands to fill their room. And the second breath in, more white light, and as they breathe slowly out, the bubble expands to fill their home. And the third, final breath, more white light, and then the bubble expands out to the universe, and anything on the other side of the bubble can't harm them.
Mm.
And so that helps them feel grounded and more centered.
Yeah, I would imagine it would. That's certainly good advice. If you, when you come across, when you're working with children that are perceptive or extremely perceptive, do you ever follow up in the later years to see if their abilities, remained or if they increased or decreased?
I haven't followed up, actually, and that's a good thing to keep in mind for myself to do that. Now that I have emails of people, I could do that.
Yeah.
Some people do spontaneously contact me a year, two, 3 years later and tell me that it was very helpful and that their child is doing more with their psychic abilities. For the most part, the abilities don't go away. They continue, and often at puberty they might change into different forms, or more abilities come in, or it might increase in intensity. So for some of the children, that's been the case when they've stayed in touch.
And we are talking with Dr. Athena Drews. Their website is perceptivechildren.org. We're going to go to a short break, and when we come back, perhaps Dr. Drews can give us some things that a parent can do to help foster a child's perceptive gifts. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Athena Drews. This show is sponsored by the Comlock Center and can be found on the web at www.comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Here at Forever Family Foundation, we're sending out a big thank you to our supportive listeners who have made possible this past year of bringing Signs of Life Radio to you. They know that even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we know that not everyone has extra income that they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And you, when you find what you are looking for, and there are more than 900 online stores like L.L. Bean, Red Envelope, 1-800-Flowers, Priceline, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holiday of the Earth raffle is in full swing. The drawing is going to be on Earth Day, April 22nd. There are only 650 chances purchased at this moment, so your probability of winning is greatly increased. The prizes are 5 different medium readings, an hour each, over the phone, so it doesn't matter where you are, and there will be 5 winners each, so you do the math. There are only 650 tickets sold to date. We also have visitation rights with Forever Family Foundation certified medium Bobby Allison on April 20th. We want to thank Bobby. This event is filled. If you're looking for Bobby Allison for your own personal appointment, you can reach her at bobbyallison.com. Dessert and Discarnates with certified medium Lynn LeClaire and only 12 seats at this exclusive fundraiser is set for June 22nd in Oceanside, New York. Right now, there are only 6 seats left to that. And our annual November conference is set for Phoenix, Arizona, and will be the first of its kind as an intensive interactive weekend where the attendees will be able to interact and question the presenters and the panel. So save the date, November 10th and 11th, and the night before, November 9th, is our conference fundraiser featuring Long Island medium Teresa Caputo at the beautiful Hilton Phoenix Airport Hotel with free shuttle service to and from the airport and local attractions. So all of these events can be reserved on our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Go on there now so you're not disappointed by not being able to get those seats. Bob?
And we are back with Dr. Athena Drews. Her website is perceptivechildren.org. And before we went to break, we were mentioning some things, Dr. Drews. Let's say I'm a parent. I see some signs in my child that he or she is exhibiting some intuitive, perceptive ability. What are some of the things that I can do to make it fun or enhance their perceptive growth, so to speak?
Sure. The most important thing is to be able to listen without judgment and have an accepting environment and be open to hearing what your child has to say, encouraging them to tell you more. Tell me about your dream. Why do you think it will come true? Isn't that interesting? Or, oh, you picked up on what I was thinking, or ways to just respond naturally rather than making a very big thing out of it where the child feels they have to perform or come up with something to please you to get your attention. You can normalize the experience and let your child know that even adults have similar experiences and there's research conducted on it. There are places to get information and books they can read. I would also just let the child be aware that not everybody has those abilities. It's a special gift that they have, much like a sports person that might be gifted or a musician or an artist. But when they speak to everyone about it, not everyone's going to open up about it or feel positive toward their experiences. So you want to be available for them. You want the child to know they can always come and talk to you about them.
Mm. Now, I know on the website, on perceptivechildren.org, I was reading you even suggested some games,
yes.
You know, that you could play with your child. Can you
yep.
get into, like,
sure.
one of those?
Some of the fun things that you can do, I use M&Ms with children and play a game. Taking 5 different colors, M&Ms, you know, say brown, yellow, red, green, orange, and 5 of each color, so you have 25 total, and you put it in a brown paper bag or something you can't see, shake it up, and write numbers 1 to 25, and have the child guess what color you're going to hold in your hand so that they can't see it, you can't see it, and have them write it down, and then take it out and see if they're right, and then put it back in. They can get a candy that matches it if they guess it right. Put the candy back, shake the bag up, and keep going through 25 times. Sometimes it'll be, say, green in a row, and then it'll change colors or whatever it comes up. By chance, you would expect, if you said yellow 25 times, five of those times you're going to be right. So
right.
Just by chance, you could get five. But when a child gets seven or above, it shows that they're operating with more than just chance, that there's some other intuitive way they're picking up that information. So that can be a fun way to do it. You can have your child draw a picture, and then you try to, in another room, draw what you think that they've come up with. The parent can then draw something, and the child can try to draw it and see if they can come up with it, or a shape or a design. So there are lots of fun things like that.
Yeah, it sounds like activities you could have in your adult class as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I have adults that do it as well, and they have fun too.
Yeah, especially if you get to eat the testing devices, right? it's been said that not only in children, also in adults, sometimes that illness or trauma could be a trigger to develop, you know, intuitiveness. Have you found this to be true in children?
I have found if they've had a near-death experience, a very severe medical illness, that sometimes, yes, that can activate or increase their abilities or their experiences.
And is that something that stays with them? I know sometimes with children who have a near-death experience, you know, at a certain point in their development, they sort of, lose some of the memories, although with some it stays with them for the rest of their lives. So, and I guess you find the same thing with perceptiveness. Some children move on in their education and various social groups and disregard the experiences they had as a child?
Yes, some do. Some suppress it or repress it, depending on how they were responded or whether or not it's created any conflicts in their life as a result. They can wind up pushing it aside and not having those experiences. For others that embrace it and want to increase or work with their abilities, they have found it will increase and develop.
Mm. Is it possible for a child to have a very significant perceptive experience, like a crisis apparition or something similar, and it just be a one-time event, and they never ever show any other ability?
I'm sure that's a possibility as well.
Yeah.
It's certainly true for adults.
Yeah.
It can be.
So a lot of children probably describe to you that they see ghosts, and a ghost is a term, I guess, that they pick up somewhere along the line. But I would think that it would be less shocking for a child to see an apparition, you know, or a ghost than for an adult, because as an adult, we learn that we're stigmatized, that the element of fear comes in. But a child is just reporting what they're seeing. So is that a kind of, do you find that to be true?
I do. Especially younger children, very young children, even infants will laugh and play and see it as part of their normal life. They haven't yet realized that that's something they should be afraid of or isn't normal until the adults around them start to add their own reactions to it.
Yeah.
They're much more open to it.
You've certainly, when you work with the Rhine Research Center, have investigated a lot of different psi phenomena. Most of the psi, psi often occurs in the unconscious realm. So, I mean, is that why so many people report this intuitiveness when they're dreaming or when they're in altered states, because that's the conduit for psi?
It can be. Also, we have a filter, in a sense, that we have up during the daytime. We're bombarded constantly by so much stimuli that we sort out mentally what we need to know to get through our day and do our work. So unless it's a very profound psychic bit of information that's sort of literally hits us hard enough to notice it, when we're sleeping, that guard is lowered. And so the defenses aren't there, and the information still comes in and becomes comes into our dreams and can take different forms in that way, or if we're meditating or if we're in an altered state, we're able to tune into it a lot better and hear it a lot better. And that's why keeping a journal by your bed and recording your dreams and just in general, keeping journals of your experiences helps see the patterns and allow yourself to be open to it more.
Do children often discuss their dreams with you?
Sometimes they have. They'll email or report, or the parent will, or write in, as they did in Louise or Ryan's letters, about experiences, about dreams that have come true. And usually they're surprised when it has happened, when it comes true a week or so later. Sometimes they're very profound, in which they've avoided serious illness or accidents as a result of it.
This may be an unusual question, but I mean, in view of the fact that you've had your own precognitive experiences and perceptiveness, I mean, when you're working with a child, do you, who is perceptive, have you ever like linked in where you're kind of having the same experience as the child?
I haven't had that. I've had a lot of connection where the child has felt very tuned into me in terms of comfortableness and like we've known each other before and they are very open. Or I'll walk down an aisle in a store and a child will come up and suddenly want to tell me an experience they've had and they've never met me before. So
right.
That kind of link that comes across.
Yeah, and we don't know what that link is. I mean, it could be some, you know, resonance or frequency or like entanglement, and I guess that's the big mystery, but there's something that they sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know this to be a fact, but I would think that because of the popularity in the media of TV shows that seem to glorify psychics and mediums, that you might come across, you know, a parent or a set of parents who think that their children have these gifts when they really don't. You know, it's sort of like showbiz parents.
Right.
Have you seen that?
I have, and unfortunately, then the parent wants to sort of monopolize on it and exploit it and have the child sort of perform for others to show that they have these abilities, and I really discourage the parent from doing that that's not very healthy for the child, who feels, you know, psychic abilities aren't always on 24/7, and you can't make it happen just because somebody wants you to produce it on at the moment. So it does lead to the child either shutting down or having to make something up, and then they get caught in that, and then it's as though they're exposed as being a fraud, and then what gifts they had and what true experience they had are lost because of those few times that they may have covered up or created something.
Well, our time is coming to an end. We really appreciate your being with us. We have been talking with Dr. Athena Drews. I encourage you to go on her website, which is perceptivechildren.org. There's a wealth of information there. There's links, resources, articles, and especially if you are dealing with a child that's perceptive, or if you know of one, or you simply want to learn more, that's a great place to start. So thank you, Dr. Drews, for being with us, and we hope you'll join us again.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Good night.
Good night.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Varon, Eileen LaFada, Joanne Gerber, Lynn LeClaire, CJ, Rita Springer, David Hayes, Pat Longo, Barbara Petillo, Doreen Malloy, and Glenna Irwin, and anybody else in need of healing. And now our prayer for the Gulf. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, plankton, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's waters, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was taken from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masaru Emoto back on May 9th, 2010.
And remember that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.